Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Harris against Cuba. Mr. Baker.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel. Keith Harris spent nearly 25 years in prison for a crime that he did not commit. The lawsuit that we brought before the district court is essentially a lawsuit alleging a Brady violation, a failure of an investigator, Dennis Cuba, to provide documents to the prosecution that were exculpatory. Now, United States Supreme Court recognized in Brady that prosecutors had an obligation to turn over exculpatory materials to the defendants. This court, in a series of cases, has recognized that there is a private cause of action under the Fourth Amendment when an investigator fails to turn over exculpatory materials to the prosecution. The most significant enunciation was the Newsom versus McCabe series of cases in which this court recognized that very principle. Now, in order for a plaintiff to be successful, they have to establish that the evidence must have been favorable, the evidence must have been suppressed, and that there was a reasonable probability that the result of the proceeding would have been different if the evidence had been turned over. Now, in our case, Keith Harris was convicted of a fairly vicious crime. He was convicted of armed robbery and attempted murder at a Shell station in Caseyville, Illinois. The only evidence offered against Mr. Harris at trial was the testimony of the victim, the eyewitness testimony. There was nothing else, not one other thing, no blood evidence linking Mr. Harris to the crime, no gun that linked to Mr. Harris to the crime, no fingerprints of Mr. Harris found at the crime. In addition, the victim, a man named Mr. Reisman, had previously, in a lineup, failed to identify Mr. Harris. Additionally, when he went for his final lineup, when he did identify Mr. Harris, he stated at trial that he just figured at that point in time that they had the person who had done this to him. This is the only evidence that was used to convict Mr. Harris. Now, the pieces of evidence that we maintain were not turned over. The district court looked at those pieces of evidence and said, you know what? They're not material in this case. In so doing, we believe that the district court ignored the pronunciation of the United States Supreme Court in the Eggers decision. In the Eggers decision, what the Supreme Court said is, when determining whether evidence is material, you need to look at the totality of the evidence that is used to convict. Specifically, this means that the omission must be evaluated in the context of the entire record. If there's no reasonable doubt about guilt, whether or not the additional evidence is considered, there's no justification for a new trial. On the other hand, if the verdict is already of minor or is already of questionable validity, additional evidence of relatively minor importance might be sufficient to create a reasonable doubt. What that means is there's sort of a slope. In this case, there can be no question but that the evidence that was used to convict Mr. Harris was very, very minor. In our brief, we have cited to numerous cases, numerous expert opinions about the inherent infallibility of eyewitness identifications. In fact, Harris's entire defense at his trial was, hey, you got the wrong guy. It wasn't me. It's a mistake of identity.
Did he testify?
I don't believe that he did, Judge Mannion. I don't believe that he did in the trial. The trial was very short. I believe it lasted portions of 2 days. That included jury selection and some arguments on motions that took up actually the bulk of it. There was very little testimony. A few investigators testified, and Mr. Reisman testified.
And you're saying that at trial that there was no knowledge that of this double presentation before a lineup? First time he didn't, and the next time he did?
No, there was knowledge of the lineup.
Well, obviously they brought that up then.
That was brought up. Yes, it was in cross-examination of Mr. Reisman questioning his identification. It was also brought up prior to that in a motion to suppress the lineup evidence on the grounds on those grounds. So yes, that information was brought up to the jury. What was not brought up to the jury was the fact that the crime that was committed at the Caseyville Shell Station was linked to two other crimes, one that occurred before and one that occurred after. These were a donut shop called the Perfect City Donut Shop, or Perfect Circle Donut Shop, excuse me, and then the Mexico City Cafe murders. Mexico City Cafe is important because these crimes, Caseyville, Mexico City, and the Perfect Circle Donut Shop, are linked together by ballistics. The ballistics evidence shows all three crimes are linked to one another. The same weapon was used in all three crimes. Now, there was a witness at the Mexico City crime who identified Keith Harris as the perpetrator. This is a significant piece of evidence because the other evidence establishes that Harris had an airtight alibi for Mexico City, even Mr. Cuba.
Well, he had an alibi. Employment records can be faked.
Well, I suppose that that's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Harris worked at a...
But, of course, he knew where he was. His own whereabouts weren't concealed from him.
Well, that's...
Nor was the fact that the same gun was used in the Mexico City Cafe murder concealed from him.
That is correct. The fact that the same gun was used was not concealed.
So what was concealed?
What was concealed was Rangel's identification of Harris for committing Mexico City. And I would like to go back...
I thought that was the subject of the separate hearing. How was this concealed?
No. Rangel's identification was not part of the separate hearing. It was Reisman. There are two people. There was a victim at Mexico City by the name of Nicholas Rangel. There was a victim that Mr. Harris was convicted of shooting named Reisman. Two separate crimes, two separate individuals. The subject of the hearing was based upon Mr. Reisman's identification, not on Mr. Rangel's. Mr. Rangel never came up during the trial. There was nothing ever mentioned about Mr. Rangel. The statements of Mr. Rangel pinpointing Keith Harris as the criminal or as the person who shot him, that was never disclosed to Harris's defense team. It was never disclosed to the prosecution. The evidence about...
And how is this exculpatory?
Well, again, you look at the slippery slope here that we have that Eggers outlines, Judge Easterbrook. You have a defense. The entire nature of the defense is, hey, look, I didn't do it. It was somebody who looks like me. In fact, Mr. Harris had a twin brother. And the defendant raised the possibility that, hey, look, this could have been his twin brother. It wasn't, but that was the argument. You got the wrong guy, somebody who looks like me. If Harris had known that Nicholas Rangel had identified him in the Mexico City case, had he known that information, it would have only strengthened his argument. Because here you have somebody who looks identical, or Rangel says Harris did it. What that means is somebody who looks identical or similar to Harris committed the Mexico City crime. Again, and given the fact that Mexico City and Caseyville are clearly linked to one another, there's no question about that.
Well, there is an argument that can be done. The no question rather overstates things.
Guns
are sold and transferred rather freely in the underground world.
And I suppose that is correct, Judge Easterbrook, but what you did have was you had three crimes, one committed before Caseyville, one committed after Caseyville, in which the very same weapon was used for all three crimes. And there's a possibility, I suppose, that the gun could be transferred. But if you put yourself in the position of a defense attorney and you put yourself in the position of a jury and you're arguing to the jury, listen, this gun was used in Mexico City, and it was also used here. The Mexico City victim says Keith Harris did it. But you know what? Employment records say that Keith Harris couldn't have done the Mexico City murder.
When he was accused of doing the Mexico City, didn't someone mention that to him? I mean, he didn't know he was accused of the Mexico City?
No. He was never accused of the Mexico City murders.
Obviously it wasn't in a lineup then. What was it, pictures?
It was a photographic lineup.
Okay.
was given to Mr. Rangel to identify individuals.
And he picked Harris's picture out.
And he picked Harris's picture out.
But there
up.
Was no follow-up by investigators with Harris on that, apparently.
At some point in time, there was a lineup. I believe three people who were killed at Mexico City. And I believe that there was another victim who was part of a lineup. And I believe Mr. Harris was part of one of the Mexico City lineups. But Mr. Harris had no knowledge of what he was being lined up for.
He didn't, and nobody ever told him that a witness picked him out as one of the killers.
That's correct. No one ever told him that information. That information was never provided to Mr. Harris. It was not provided until about the year 2000. And that was one of the pieces of evidence that was used to secure Mr. Harris's clemency. And I want to go back to one of the questions that you raised, Judge Easterbrook, about Mr. Harris would have clearly known that he wasn't at Mexico City when that crime occurred because he would have been at work. And that's true. The problem is Harris and his counsel had no knowledge of when the Mexico City crime took place.
In what way was that concealed from them?
Well, it wasn't concealed from them.
Brady is about concealing evidence that's known to the police and not known or knowable to the defense. Is there any problem in figuring out when the Mexico City crime occurred?
Well,
you look at the newspaper reports. Do they have the time?
No. I mean, back then, no. There's no evidence indicating that there was any time linked to that.
No, wait a minute. If you look at the newspaper reports, do they have the time?
Are you talking about in this particular case, in the Mexico City case?
Mexico City Cafe crime.
Judge Easterbrook, I don't believe that they do. I could be proven wrong about that, but I...
That's because you inquired and found out that they do not?
Judge, we looked...
You just didn't inquire.
No. We looked for a lot of evidence. The problem is you're talking about things that occurred more than 25 years ago.
That's why newspapers have morgues.
Well... We were able to find some that didn't mention the time of the Mexico City murder. You have a community, a Metro East community, Judge, where there are probably, between weekly periodicals and other types of newspapers, 15 or 20 different newspapers that existed, some of which are no longer in existence today. I do see that my white light has come on. I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr.
Thank
Baker.
You.
Mr. Post.
Yes, may it please the Court. Gerald Post, Assistant Attorney General representing State Police Officers Dennis Kuba and Edward Muzzy. As counsel says, a Brady violation requires suppression by the government of favorable evidence resulting in prejudice to the defendant at his trial. He refers to this Mexico City evidence, but I think it's most clear that there was no suppression, certainly no suppression by Dennis Kuba related to that. He points to a supposed confession by a man named Chamberlain that he had committed the Mexico City cafe crime. Kuba said he was not aware of that until the year 2000. He could not have been guilty of suppressing that evidence. It's just Judge Easterbrook pointed out the time that he was at work was obviously known to him. The time of the Mexico City cafe crime should have been known to him, at least through due diligence. He was aware that a common weapon had been used in both crimes. It seems inconceivable that his counsel would not have considered alibis for those other crimes.
Did Kuba investigate the Mexico City cafe crime?
Pardon me?
Was Kuba an investigator on that crime?
He was not in charge of the investigation. He was somewhat involved and somewhat familiar with some of the facts. But a man named Johnson was in charge of that investigation. Kuba was in charge of the Shell Station crime, of which Harris had been charged and convicted. So he was not... in charge of that Mexico City Cafe crime, which brings me to the third point, the identification of Rangel, of Harris, as having committed that separate crime. Cuba testified that he turned over the entirety of his investigative file on the Shell Station crime to the state's attorney, and he testified that Johnson would have been responsible for advising the state's attorney of all the evidence gathered with respect to the Mexico City crime. There is no obligation for Cuba to search through the other state police officers in charge of other investigations occurring at this time, and counsel refers to an entire crime wave occurring here. There certainly is no obligation for him to try to pick out evidence which is not in itself exculpatory. This is an identification that the defendant had committed another very similar crime involving the same weapon, so that on its face it's not exculpatory. Its relevance as a means of defense is somewhat, you have to go through several steps before you can use that, and even on that theory, I'm not sure if it actually works.
Well, apparently,
you have to show evidence that he was identified as being there. In fact, he was not there, convince a jury of that. I don't think you can expect a police officer to immediately say, aha, that piece of evidence is exculpatory, I better include it into my file.
I'm mostly interested in what Harris should have known.
Pardon me?
And apparently, even though a witness accused or at least identified Harris through pictures as being one of the, I don't know, killer or shooter or something, mm-hmm. No one must have followed up with Harris. He must not have been investigated. No one must have either didn't believe it or something else happened where Harris was never notified that someone accused him of this crime.
I am uncertain as the extent of whether he was notified
or
not.
Well, if he were notified, this wouldn't be a mystery.
This wouldn't be a mystery, no.
But you don't know whether he was notified or not.
I do not know that for sure. I know that there is an indication that a witness died in that particular case, and the case did not proceed from that point.
I see. The witness that picked the picture out died.
There's simply an indication that a witness had died, and it doesn't specifically say the witness who had, that Rangel had died. I don't know that, Your Honor. The record is not clear on that. But those are the three forms of evidence, all from a different crime investigation that Cuba was not in charge of. He clearly did not suppress that evidence. And I don't think the evidence was favorable as well, the second criteria for Brady. Certainly not the identification at the Mexico City Cafe crime, unless it's combined with several other elements. Not the Chamberlain confession, which apparently included reference to Harris's co-defendant as also committing the Mexico City crime, and an unidentified black male. So that's not very helpful as well. And the fact that he was at work at the Mexico City Cafe crime is not helpful with regard to whether he was able to do the Shell Station crime. In fact, the work records indicate he was not at work at that particular time. I think all of this boils down to the third factor. There was no prejudice in Harris's ability to present a defense in this matter. There's no reasonable probability of a different verdict had this information been provided. So we really do not have a Brady violation under these criteria. Now, counsel mentioned, he mentioned the Fourth Amendment in relation to a Brady violation, and that is interesting in that I was not...
A slip of the tongue, counsel.
Okay, a slip of the tongue, that's fine. It was not in the complaint. It was not a reference in the response to the motion for judgment. There is no Fourth Amendment. This is... we were under the understanding this was a straightforward Brady due process type of theory. And the theory is that not only must the state's attorney provide the evidence to the defense counsel, but that all that evidence has to be routed through the particular police officer in charge of that investigation. That is unwarranted and I think a foolish proposition. We think the district court got it right in finding this stuff was not material and in issuing a summary judgment for us on this. There was no argument regarding the second claim here concerning a statement made by Cuba and Muzzy. And incidentally, there are the claims against Muzzy relating to the Mexico City evidence apparently have been dropped. He's not mentioned anymore regarding that. But the second theory the plaintiff had here was that the statement made by Cuba and Muzzy to the state's attorney at about the time of a motion for a new trial, to the extent that Harris had a personal relationship with a guy named Gervies Davis, who subsequently admitted to this crime and nearly a dozen others. I submit that this, too, does not fit the Brady factors. Certainly not exculpatory evidence. I think that's explained somewhat in the Sornberger and Gouger decisions that we refer to, and I say those cases kind of rule this theory out as well. We would ask the court to affirm the summary judgment on all bases. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Post. Anything further, Mr. Becker?
Yes. Thank you. May it please the court. Judge Mannion, I wanted to address some points that you have raised about the timing of all of this. Keith Harris was identified in the lineup by Nicholas Rangel. Thereafter, what happened was ISP sent an investigator to his place of work, Rockwell International, and that's when they concluded that Harris was at work during that period of time. Okay? And at that point in time, Cuba says he was no longer a suspect in the Mexico City case at that point in time because they were comfortable with the alibi information that he had. None of that information was ever provided to the prosecutors. Never. It still hasn't been provided to the prosecutors. In this case, the evidence, we went through at great length how evidence is presented to a prosecutor. And while Mr. Cuba was not the lead investigator on the Mexico City case, he was very well versed in it, and he was very involved in the investigatory process. The information that he submitted to the prosecutor included certain information, certain police reports that had been authored by Jerry Johnson that related to the Mexico City crime. In his testimony, it's very clear that Mr. Cuba had knowledge of both the alibi and had knowledge of Rangel's identification of Cuba. He knew those things, and he didn't provide that information to the prosecutors. In turn, it was not provided. It was put in the Mexico City file, but not put into the Shell Station file. And if you go through the documents, it is clear from his answers to interrogatories that file, the Mexico City file, to this day has not been produced to prosecutors. And he knows this information. And so the suggestion that somehow Mr. Cuba was not intimately aware of the Mexico City investigation is ludicrous. He was actively involved in it. He acknowledges that he was involved in it. I see that my time has expired. I thank the court, and we ask that the court reverse the grant of summary judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.